loves me so much. Closing out a set of new Canadian rock and blues music from Acoustic Sessions, we had Montreal's Mike Goudreau with What Did I Say? Before that, from her new release, Sunday Wild and the One-Eyed Jacks, we had Ontario's Sunday Wild with Captured Me. And I got that set started off with Vancouver's three-time Maple Blues Award winner for Harmonica Player of the Year, Harp Dog Brown, with the title track from his new release, For Love and Money. This is the Rock and Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Starting off this set, inaugural Blues Hall of Famer, four-time Grammy winner, and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee John Lee Hooker passed away 18 years ago Friday, June 21, 2001 at 83. Born in Cahoma County, Mississippi in 1917, Hooker was awarded the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2000 and charted 8 albums and 1 song on 3 different Billboard charts. He was nominated for 16 Blues Music Awards, winning 14 times, and has 2 singles inducted in the Blues Hall of Fame. On Rolling Stone Magazine's 100 Greatest Singers of All Time, John Lee Hooker ranked number 81, and on their 100 Greatest Guitarists of All Time, he ranked number 35 on their 2011 list. From 1960s, That's My Story, this is the legendary John Lee Hooker with No More Doggin'.
No more dogging, fooling around with you. Honey, no more dogging, fooling around with you. I'm gonna let you out, baby, that's what I've got to do. Will I tell you out the streets and I meet you fine? Spend my money on a whiskey, beer, and wine. No more dogging, fooling around with you.
gonna let you on, baby. That's what I've got to do. Well, you told me that you love me and you told me a lie. Yes, I love you until the day I die. No more dogging, fooling around, yo. I got to let you out, baby. That's what I've got. Oh, yeah. Yes, I love you until the day I die. No more dogging, fooling around with you. I got to let you out, baby. That's what I've got to do. I got to let you out, baby. That's what I've got to do. I got to let you out, baby. That's what I've got to do.
Democracy Now!, hosted by award-winning independent journalist Amy Goodman. Tune in to your daily progressive news, aired Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. on CJSF.
Told me, told leave that girl alone, but my mother didn't know what that little girl was putting down on me. Move, I'm in the mood, baby, I'm in the mood for love. Up and go. Well, your high pile of women sure got the bottle up and go.
gray. Ain't too old to ship them, girl. You got to bottle up and go. You got to bottle up and go. While you high pile of women, sure got to bottle up and go. All right. Kid mine, you got to bottle up and go. You got to bottle up and go. You got to bottle up and go. Baby, you got to bottle up and go. Bop, 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 bop.
Closing out a set featuring the music of the late, great John Lee Hooker from his 1971 collaboration, Hooker and Heat. We had John Lee Hooker and Canned Heat with Bottle Up and Go. Before that, from 1966's Real Folk Blues, we had I'm in the Mood. And I got that set started off with John Lee Hooker and No More Doggin' from 1960's That's My Story. This is the Rockin' Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Starting off this set, the second part of my three-part interview with blues rock legend Kim Simmons.
You were born in Wales. How old were you when you guys moved to England?
I was about 10 years old. But those 10 years were very formative of me, you know, and I think that I'm very Welsh. And even though I moved to London at 10 years old, I went to school and it was very difficult, you know, with a Welsh accent. So I quickly became English, really, you know, with an English accent and, you know, fit in with the school children. But I think I'm very Welsh in my soul. So those first years were formative, but we were in a coal mine in town. And my brother, he was 7 years older than me, and he was a big rock and roll and blues fan from the early 50s on. And so I was 6 years old, and I remember listening to my first records that he was playing in 1953. So I grew up listening to all the music he had, and he was a coal miner. Then when we moved to London, he did various jobs, and I asked him to manage the band when I had formed that club, and he became my manager. So we had a great relationship all through the 60s and 70s with him, you know, taking care of the business, and I took care of the art side of it. So he went all the way from being a coal miner to being a top-level agent and manager. So his story is quite amazing. He passed away a couple of years ago, but that was an amazing story. The whole family moved up from Wales when I was 10 and moved up with him, of course, because he was only 15, 16. They didn't want him working down the coal mines. So that was good for us, really, that the family moved, of course, because all of a sudden we had this fantastic opportunity being in London at the right place at the right time. We were born with the family trait, which is a lot of energy. And, of course, we were able to both turn that energy into musical careers.
In the early days, you opened up for Cream and John Lee Hooker. What were those experiences like?
It was amazing. Of course, I did a tour with John Lee Hooker. We did 24 shows in 21 days, every day playing. I think we did three shows one day. And when I said to John, you know, sorry that we're playing three shows in a day, he said, oh, don't worry about it. In Detroit, back in the 50s, I played nine shows in a day. So,
because they talk about guys, you know, with energy.
Now, that's talking about energy. Of course, those nine shows would have been house parties and all sorts of things. Nine shows in a day. And then we opened for Cream. That was fantastic. You know, people have the wrong idea about those days, you know, because they're very small rooms. When we did the show at Klook's Clique in North London, really, it was a small room. It was their first date in London. They had gone round England prepping themselves and getting ready, and they came to London. That was their first date. And they were considered the three best musicians in England at the time. Of course, I'd followed Eric Clapton's career from the Yardbirds, you know, through John Mayall and then to the Cream. So I was the opening act, but the room was so small and the stage was so small, we couldn't even get any of our equipment. I couldn't even get my amplifier on stage. It was that small. And so they very kindly let us use all their equipment.
Oh, wow.
So that just shows you how different it was back then, how somewhat less competitive it was, you know. There was no such thing as a rock and roll star back then. People were just musicians and willing to help other musicians. So it's a memory that I'll never forget. I mean, I was really, really nervous, you know, asking for used equipment, but they were fantastic. I found that the best musicians are the nicest musicians. The people that are not the best are not so nice. Johnny Hooker was a darling, but maybe not the right word to use, but he was wonderful, you know, and Champion Jack Dupree, I played a lot with him in 1966. He was in the same agency with me. Great New Orleans blues pianist and a legend, really. Played lots of gigs with him, backed him up, opened the show with Savoy Brown, then back up Champion Jack when he came on. But what a great guy he was. I mean, it's hard to believe. For me, at the time, you know, I grew up with their records, and I didn't think they existed in this world. For me, listening to the records, you can imagine, back in, I would say, 1961, 62, it was an out-of-body experience, you know, it was unbelievable. And now we're all being prepped on blues and those kind of things, you know. But back then, it was just earth-shattering, and so suddenly to be playing with these people, you know, and they actually are human, you know. And I'm talking about being 17 years old, you know, 18. It was mind-blowing.
Savoy Brown really made a name for itself touring through the States. Whose idea was it to go that route when, like, bands like the Beatles had said, we don't want to tour anymore, we're just going to make albums?
You know, Savoy Brown, it weren't the Beatles, and, you know, obviously the Beatles, you're talking about Tiger Woods in golf, Muhammad Ali in boxing, you know, the Beatles were that to music, so, to rock bands. So we had to go about it a different way, you know. I wanted to be successful, and I wanted to be one of the best, and so my way of doing things was, hey, you know, we're going to work hard, we're going to hit the road, and that's the music we were playing anyway. I think our music is very blue-collar.
I remember an interview with Keith Richards where he said, when I was 20 years old, a concert lasted 20 minutes, and I'm 70 years old, and they last 3 hours.
I mean, Keith Richards comes out with such wonderful quotes, and that's very true. I remember when we did our first tour, we just do 30 minutes. Even when we were headlining at Carnegie Hall or, you know, the Fillmore West, East and stuff, which is an hour. It was remarkable. But of course, it only cost $3 to see that hour. Now with people spending, you know, $150 a ticket, I think acts think, oh, we've got to give them something extra, you know. So I guess your money pays for extra time. But back then, somebody reminded me earlier, you do a show with Steppenwolf and Savoy Brown, or Savoy Brown, Fleetwood Mac, Long John Baldry, that was a big tour I did, and that was like $350.
When you first came to the States, what was your first impression? Was it kind of what you had thought it was going to be, or was it something else entirely?
Oh, yeah. It was everything. We went to Canada first, you know. Right. Our first North American dates were in Canada, and I've got great memories of those dates because quite a few people came along with Scottish in the 60s. I guess a lot of Scottish people had emigrated over here. And so I remember meeting quite a few Scottish people. I remember playing the Canadian shows, and it was great. Then we dropped down into the States, and that was good because it kind of gave us a buffer. We went into the States, and it was everything I expected it to be. It was fast and crazy, and I think I always had a much warmer spot for Canada because it was more like my home country, you know. And ever since that point, every tour we would do, we would start off in Canada. And even to this day, there's a big following for Savoy Brown in Canada, which is wonderful. I love going up there. Even though it has changed, I can't find the English bacon or English cake so easily anymore.
When you were touring the States, I guess this must have been in the late 60s, early 70s, you had bands like Kiss and ZZ Top open up for you. What did you think of the first time you saw them?
Well, I think the music had got kind of stuffy. Like, musicians like myself, we considered ourselves, you know, real musicians, and, you know, we're a bit stuffy. And I think that Kiss, for instance, came along, and they were the opening act, Manfred Mann and then Savoy Brown. We were the headliners for a big North American tour. It went everywhere, Canada, Alaska, all through the States. So Kiss were one of those acts. I think it was their first national tour. And they were a breath of fresh air because you had Manfred Mann, who was serious musicians. You had Savoy Brown, that was serious musicians. And really, Kiss were sort of puncturing a hole in our egos and the balloon that we had created. So I thought they were good fun. They were the antidote to all that seriousness, you know. So I think they were a great success because they had something fresh to offer and were going against the grain.
Yeah, completely different from ZZ Top.
Then ZZ Top did the same thing. They opened for us on a big tour, and that was in their cowboy hat days, and they were playing good blues, you know, sort of, you know, rocking blues rock, and it was, I think it was 74 or something like that. Both those tours were in that time period. It was pretty good, actually. I've got the posters at home to prove it. We'll be right back.
From their new release, City Night, that was Savoy Brown with Red Light Mama. And before that, the second part of my three-part interview with Kim Simmons. I'll have the last part later in the show. This is the Rockin' Blues Show, and I'm your host, Brent Morrison. Taking us across the top of our first hour from his brand new release, Tired of Talkin', this is Hamilton's Steve Strongman with Hard Place and a Rock.
Everywhere I look, it's looking tough. The only way to get on through it is to put your head down and get to it. Stuck between a hard place and a rock. It can be hard, bruises hurt. Kick when you're down, just makes it worse. There's no way out, nowhere to turn. I feel the heat, I feel the burn. The only way to get on through it is to put your head down and get to it. Stuck between a hard place and a rock. Between a hard place and a rock. Nothing's easy.